Today's conversation is with Tracy O'Meara Smith, and this conversation came about because Tracy is a Carlosophies listener. She's part of my Show Up Speak Up community on Facebook, and I had put a post out there saying, just ask for what you want. So she asked to come on the show, and I said, it would be my absolute pleasure. And I'm stoked that I did. This conversation is really bloody good. I love these kind of really juicy, meaty, you know, chats about life and business and keeping it real and femininity. And, you know, it's a fucking cool conversation. So I'm just going to shut up and let Tracy do the talking. Here is Tracy O'Meara Smith. Welcome to Carlosophies, Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
I'm here because I went to a business conference, and there was this, I think it was a dare. And so the dare was, you need to make a big leap in your life to make things different, to make change, to put yourself out into the comfort zone. And so for mine was, I needed to get my voice out there and go past the comfort zone and start promoting or marketing, or just, as you would say, put your skin in the game. So I went, okay, I'm going to send out 5 pitches for 5 podcast interviews. I'm just going to ask. And then lo and behold, you're sitting in your Facebook group talking about just ask. And so I hit the comment, I'd like to go on your podcast. So here I am. And so the universe has brought us together, which is pretty much the way my life has run. So I'm a holistic practitioner. I specialise in flower essence, Bowen Emmett, and mineral therapy. I work predominantly with women with chronic pain, anxiety, and remedial health issues. And it's the journey of the flower essences that have pretty much transformed my life, because I've had a lot of inner conflict and a lot of battle with depression and anxiety. And when my youngest daughter was born, she was born with hip dysplasia and didn't sleep, and I didn't get a break. So I thought, I need to get out, I need to do something. And I started studying flower essences, and they're a derivative, a healing modality derived from Aboriginal culture. So I was exposed to our culture in this country in such a way that it helped me navigate who I am as a person, but also who I am as a woman and my place amongst that and within my family. So it's been a very deep journey, and I found that I have a natural affinity with the flowers, and they have a natural affinity with me. And through the training, I was exposed to parts of the Aboriginal culture through a healing perspective. So I studied through the Life Academy here in Joondalup in Western Australia. And part of that training was to experience a tribal healing ceremony called a flower pit ceremony. So you dig pits and fill them with coals, and then lay them with bark, and then you put native flowers on top of them. People are chosen through the elders to sit in the pits, and it's covered with kangaroo skin, and then there's the tribal chanting. And it was such an incredible insight to understand in a tribal perspective that everybody is there for your process and understands your process. So there's an intricate connection between you and the tribe. And it was so powerful and completely embraced and connected to the earth and in each other. And from there, my journey started. And the flowers became a bit of an obsession. it was very hard for me to translate that energy connection to vibrational medicine. So that's how I headed into the bodywork, because I didn't believe, there was a belief that I couldn't make a living through vibrational medicine, which now vibrational medicine and self-realization is very much part of our human consciousness. It's very well accepted. But 8 years ago even, it was very new. I didn't necessarily have the grounding, but I started having the understanding. And then my father was diagnosed with liver cancer, and I had a very estranged relationship with him. So it was a means for me to connect with him, because he said, "Dad, I'll come and treat you. I'll treat you with the flowers." I would meet with him twice, three times a week, and through the process I was able to help him navigate his death and heal our relationship. And from that process I became anew. As sad as it was that he died and we were on the same page. And I was there when he died. It was the most privileged thing I could have ever experienced. I then found a lady called Hannah Rachel Bell, who was taken under the wing by a lawman called David Muljawali. I hope I pronounce Muljawali. I always pronounce his name wrong. Amazing man, who was a tribal elder from the Naranin tribe in the northern part of Western Australia in the Mitchell Plateau. And he understood the complexity of the complete annihilation of his culture, and yet he embraced white society Australia, because he understood that the only way for healing with the Aboriginal culture and our inverted patriarchy was through healing and a two-way conversation, understanding that the culture of this country and the patriarchy need to meet and need to talk about the beauty of the culture within the Aboriginal community, within their stories and the narrative myth. And it went deeper than that, because what Hannah and what I've since learnt is that as a woman within the culture of the Aboriginal, we have the authority and the sacred right in terms of navigating the intricacies within a tribal culture, because we carry within us physically the mitochondrial DNA that carries the narrative from the story's previous generations. It's very powerful. So the way that she would word it is that in our gender exclusively, we have all prior human narratives that manifest physically, and we do that without question. So basically the role of woman is to gestate, is to birth the new. So we're the keepers of the old, and we're here to birth the new. And we do that physically, and we do that idealistically. So in Aboriginal tribe, they meet in circle, which is very symbolic of the womb. And in that process, they gestate their ideas. And they are the authority within the tribe. So if we as women embraced our authority, then we will sit in a space where body image isn't an issue, and we claim what we're here to do, whether we choose to have children or not. And in Aboriginal communities and in the society, whether you can bear children is not based on a sense of worth. It actually considered a destiny. So if you can't bear children, then you're then seen as a seer. So whereas an Aboriginal woman who bears children, she plugs into her children and teaches her children the narrative of the culture. The woman that can't birth children is given access to cosmic consciousness. So they're open to a portal. So they plug into the universe, and they're given wisdom to then give to the tribe. So it's a very, very powerful way of seeing our role as women in society, in our community, and in our families. And if we embrace that value, then our responsibility of the narrative of our culture and of our families and where we sit in that, well, there wouldn't be an argument about pay scale. you know, it wouldn't be an issue because we're claiming that parts of ourselves, which is in us intrinsically. Understanding that authority and claiming that for me, especially a holistic practitioner, has been incredibly empowering and incredibly healing.
Yeah, so I just watched Wonder Woman last night. and I absolutely loved it because of the, you know, of the flip of the role of the feminine in that particular film. So I loved her power, her belief in, you know, in the face of everything, she still hung on to the belief that have you seen the movie?
Yes, I have. And I love the fact, and this is the thing with the patriarchy that we live under now, is that women and children are considered collateral damage. And in her, she said, that is not acceptable. And in her compassion, you can still lead with compassion.
And that's what I loved about that movie, you know, because it was like she was still all the things that women are often, you know, they're not respected these days. She was emotional, you know, she would see the people being part of this huge war going on, and it would affect her, and that was okay. There was nothing wrong with her being emotional, which I really loved, because I feel like women are often made a mockery of because we're emotional beings.
Yes, you know, but it's in that emotion, in that feeling space, that we find our power. And we need to be free to do that. And that's why, especially in the Aboriginal culture, and this is what Hannah's book talks about, because it's called Men's Business, Women Business, that intrinsically we are different. So physically we are different. We have different needs. And that women need to come together in a way to be able to express that, because if you throw a male amongst a circle, it changes the dynamic. So, and the way, you know, it's necessary. And I think that's why women, we have this worry about our kids, whether we're doing it right or whether we're mucking them up, or, you know, whether they have to eat the right foods or wear the right clothing or put the chemicals in. And in a supportive environment, that's not an issue. So we're isolated, and it's in that isolation that we can get lost. And if you throw sleep deprivation and hormones amongst that, I mean, it didn't need to be that way.
No. And, you know, that's I've been writing my book, and I've just a few days ago wrote a chapter about the first year of motherhood and how difficult it was for me, because I felt so isolated in it, and I didn't want to get things wrong, and I didn't want to look like I didn't know what I was doing, so I wasn't willing to ask for help. And I just, you know, I became very attached to the sleep thing because I needed to get work done, and so I couldn't leave the house, and it all just compounded. And there were definitely moments where I enjoyed motherhood. I love being a mother, and I loved, you know, there were moments where you're just smelling your baby and you're just like, oh, this is bliss. But there were equal amounts of time where I was feeling totally disconnected from the world around me.
Yeah. And I think also too, I'm still, my kids are 8 and 11. I think understanding what the role of being a mum actually is and what's expected and how to facilitate that. And, you know, it's the invisible stuff that no one sees that we seem to devalue. I mean, we're up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a vomiting child. We're there till 5. We're there till 6. We tie the shoelaces. We put the hair back. We give them a kiss on the cheek. We give them a hug. No one sees that. And so it's so important that we see that and we value that. And that the role of mother in the family becomes more of a value. So I'm trying to explain to my kids that, yes, I'm your mum, but I'm not here to pick up your stuff. You know, it's not who I, you know.
Mum doesn't equal slave.
Yeah. And in saying that, I've stopped saying that to them because they've repeated it back to me and I've gone, oh, that doesn't sound so right. It's respecting, because they're girls, it's respecting, you know, I'm your mum. I love you no matter what you do, you know, and that is of value. But I'm also here to teach you how to look after yourself so my grandkids don't do this to you, you know. And so we're looking after the next generation. And that's, the Aboriginals understood that. They understood that they were here to birth the new, and they were here to look after the next generation. I think it's at some point in the tribal law, the boys go out, they go walk about, and especially times of drought, they go looking for signs. And what the previous generation have left are stone formations based under trees, and what that symbol says is there's water here. So they look out for things from their previous ancestors, so they are there for their own survival. And that's what we need to think of. We think, I haven't got any sleep. I don't, when we're with our kids, I haven't got any sleep. I've got to do the meals. And, you know, sometimes a boiled egg on a piece of toast is fine, but we need to also be looking after ourselves so our kids understand that they are of value and that it is okay to take some time out to recharge and fulfill our batteries. Because we're on this constant merry-go-round of having to get things done, we forget to connect and we forget to stop. And it's in that connection that usually the solution happens. And I find that in my clinic with the Bowen is a lot of people come in at their wit's end or are in complete pain because they've failed to listen or connect. And I think within the Aboriginal culture, it is the listening. It's the listening to spirit, it's the listening to each other, and they understand that there's an intrinsic element, an unconscious force that supports them. And I mean, if that unconscious force brought us together, and that's how it works, and being open to that. We can only be open to that by being passive.
Yes. Oh, yes. This has been a big lesson for me lately. It wasn't that long ago that I was in the doctor's surgery, hooked up to an ECG, thinking I was having a heart attack because I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
I wasn't listening to spirit. I wasn't listening to myself. And that was huge.
Yeah, and I still, I will sometimes be in conversation, be so excited about things I want to say and talk over the top of people, which is so rude. But I get so excited about stuff. But it's like, oh, no, I have to stop. Relax. Listen. You'll be heard. It's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think sometimes it's listening. You're so worried about losing the moment, you know, and it passing us by. And one thing that I've really clung to recently is that idea of what is for you won't go by you. You can't miss what is coming for you.
Yeah. You know? And I think that, you know, the one thing that the essences and connecting with the Aboriginal culture has taught me is that you don't need very much. You really don't need any much. If you're full in your heart and your soul, you don't really need very much. And we can be that if we gave ourselves the time and space. I know in the depth of my despair, the pain wanting something and reaching for it and could never really connect with it was a really understanding I had to go deep to clear out some old belief patterns and some old ancestral stuff that just didn't belong here anymore. And through that journey, you become quite humble. And when you can sit safely in your own skin without the anxiety that hangs over you, that in itself is, you don't need very much.
Yeah. And it's surprising, isn't it? Because we think we need so much, you know, and we attach so much to the need too. It's like for me, the last month especially has really been just unneeding things. I've just come to a place where I have become more passive. I don't actually need to be Oprah or have that level of success. Yeah. I don't need a big fancy house. I don't need fancy whatever. There's not a lot that we actually need if we're really, really truthful with ourselves. And we definitely don't need to be constantly worrying about how.
Yeah, and then it comes down to what you value. So what do you value and what's important? And when you're in amongst it, it can be just quite simple. So for me, I understand that my family are my anchor And I did this archetypal course with this lady called Shannon Bush. It's called Magnetic Me, and she does these archetypes for personal leadership. And within my archetypal makeup, within my psyche, I have an archetype called the Liberator Engineer, and within that, I need to be free. It doesn't matter what I do, as long as I have a sense of freedom, that brings me balance. And I realised that my daughter has learning issues and had quite high anxiety, so we had to navigate that. And through that, it triggered a lot of my anxiety. So we moved through that. I used my tools. I learnt so much about brain cognition, retention, the way dyslexic kids look at the world, and the high anxiety that goes around that, and within a family context as well, because things don't seem so easy. Mums with kids with disabilities don't get a lot of support, and it is and very little respite. And I'm not saying Grace is that in that category, but in a learning context, in an education environment, there's very little support. So you're very much left on your own devices to navigate that. And so once that was sorted, I sort of kept myself back. I'd held myself back. So the kids were fine, and my life was toggling away, but I wasn't free. I didn't feel free. And this is when this resentment started. So then I realized, oh my God, I've been holding myself back, making sure my family are safe. What about me? And then so I just pushed through something and I realized I can have the dream. I can work, do my work and have a family and still be present for all of it. So, and I can be stressed and I can still be connected. So once I realized that, I ended up on a podcast with you. So here I am. So, you know, and that's the thing, it's getting my message out and having that confidence and understanding that nothing's going to be perfect. I still have my stuff. Mm-hmm. I still, you know, have to work out the balance. Time management is an absolute something I constantly need to try and learn. And planning is something that I still have to try and learn. But that's the beauty of being human. And so now life seems fun. And even though my kids leave stuff all over the house, I'm not in this sense of no one listens to me, I don't live my life, I do everything for you and I don't get any reward for it. I'm coming from a completely different space. But I'm also choosing to leave 7 loads of washing on the couch, and that can fold. I'll fold that when I get to it. I don't have to feel like everything will be a sense of peace if that's not done, because it will always be there.
Half the issue, yeah, it will. ain't that the truth? I think the issue is because, you know, in writing my book again, it's like some of the themes that have come up time and time again, and you mentioned it just before, was that resentment. Yeah. You know, we can have resentment, like, so that first year of motherhood, you know, I had Mabel, and this had actually nothing to do with my friends because they're wonderful people, but I felt very unsupported during that first year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of had expected, I had these expectations that I would have the baby and people would be lining up at the door with their meals for me and, you know, I don't know, showering me with love and gifts. And it didn't happen that way. And so I started resenting them, resenting everything. And it's really just our attachment to an idea that leads to that resentment. You know, it's the expectation. And we can choose the weight that we give that, you know. We can choose the response that we have to it. I recently had a situation where I kept on coming back to my bank account and it just kept on, you know, being very low and sometimes at zero and sometimes below zero. And I started to recognize the emotional response that I had to that number. And it was all consuming. It would make me feel nauseous. I would go into this highly stressed and anxious state. And then I realized, this is me doing that. The zero actually means nothing.
Mm.
It's my attachment to the zero that's the issue here.
Yeah.
You know?
And it could come down to a sense of, I mean, self-worth. And I think men in particular, like I started my business and I was so naive about what that actually meant and what having your own business actually means. Navigating that, okay, yep, you're fantastic at what you do, you're a great healer, you love the flowers, you're great with the body work, you get results, you've got to go and sell that.
Yeah.
And that brings up so many blocks and so many, that sense of all the gaps of where you don't feel full as a human and the insecurities, and that's why the support network's so important. So when we put our heart and soul into something and the monetary success isn't there, it's heart-wrenching. And then you have women like me who want to be available for their children, and the business is doing okay now, but my husband's saying, we need to pay the mortgage, you know? When's it going to happen? Are being really patient, and he's incredibly supportive, and I want to be able to contribute to that, but it's a time factor and all the ducks need to be in a certain row. But now I've put all this work into things and I realized I haven't really been advertising. I haven't put myself out there. My skin is not in the game. I have all these fabtabulous ideas, but I'm not necessarily actioning on them that would bring me that element of success. And I think when we worry instead of stepping into, so we move into the fear, move into the anxiety rather than stepping away from it, that's when the magic happens. And that's when stars align for us to talk to each other, because you needed someone on your podcast and I needed to talk, you know, and I needed to get my message out there. And if we're open to that, it can be easy.
And we can make it like we just make it about so much other stuff. I recently started a mastermind with my best mate, Lisa, and it's just really interesting. We had a conversation in there just yesterday about how often, you know, for me, I've worked with a lot of, and I've been around this female entrepreneur game, I guess, for a number of years now. And so I see the same things happening again and again, because they've happened to me too. You know, yesterday we were just talking about how one of the girls had this really great product that she was launching. She was so excited about it. Her confidence was just skyrocketing. And then I came to her and I asked her, so how are you going to promote it? And I said, you know, I think the best way that you could do it is just start with some warm leads, some people who know who you are, you may have worked with them before, and just invite them to jump on a call with you and talk about, you know, what they're struggling with at the moment and how this product that you've created could really help them. And she was just like, oh my God, I'm having huge anxiety about this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because this seems so simple, right? This is what really drives me crazy about the current world of the online space, is that we think we need all these different things. So we need to be on Facebook. We need to be really popular on Facebook. We need to be killing Instagram. We need to have the podcast. We need to be blogging. We need to have a beautiful website with beautiful pictures. And we need all this stuff. We don't need any of that stuff. What we need to be willing to do is speak to other human beings.
Yep. And the last business conference I went to really showed me that. It's the one-on-one communication. You can't connection. You can't move away from that. But I think also too, social media has been fantastic for introverts, and I'm one of them. And especially when you're going through deep change, deep transformation, which a lot of people are, social media has been a God-given grace for people, but it can only feed the self-esteem for so far, because you still need to go out there and walk your talk. I'd made these amazing connections with these women online, and here I am seeing them face to face. It gave me permission to step into that, and it was an incredible, liberating, amazing experience to be around women with like mind who had a passion about the business just as much as I did and were there to support me.
Yeah. And that's what it is all about.
Yeah. It's a support.
Yeah, it is a support. And I think like support has to start you first too, right? Like it has to start in a place of you being okay with you.
Yeah. And also too, in a family environment, my husband's been amazingly supportive, you know, always there for the meltdown. And then, you know, he would say, you just, why are you so resentful to it? Why are you so angry? And I was like, well, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And he said, I never asked you to do that. You can do whatever you want. He said, why are you holding yourself back? I didn't ask you to stay back and fold all that washing or put all this away. You know, why, you know, I wouldn't ask you to do that. You can go out and do whatever you want. And so I realized how much I project and how much I wasn't taking responsibility for. And my poor husband just, you know, copped a lot because I wasn't looking at my role within the family context, because once you throw kids into the mix, it just changes your whole dynamic and you have to look at things in a completely different way. And also too, if your childhood wasn't healthy, then you have gaps that are missing, and then you not necessarily know what a healthy relationship looks like or how you navigate that. So it needs to be a very internal life path until you come to a point of a sense of harmony and peace. And I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you had I not found that, because the anxiety and the would be too big.
And yeah, well, it gets in the way of the connection. That is the thing that I found really difficult was, you know, while I craved connection so badly when I, you know, when I was first diagnosed with depression, it really came about through being isolated.
Yeah.
And then further isolating myself, and then having the depression and anxiety even further isolate myself. So what I craved was belonging, you know, being understood, being seen and being heard. Yet I didn't allow myself any of those things, partly because I was afraid of what that would mean, but also partly because my anxiety and depression didn't really allow for that. It meant that I had to go, like, it's weird because depression to me feels like you're kind of living in your own world, disconnected from everything around you. But to heal from it, you have to kind of go further in.
And I think also the social stigma around mental health is still one of shame. And, you know, there were times where I was deeply troubled and deeply in a world of enmeshed in so many layers of junk, and I just pretended it didn't exist. And people around me knew I wasn't quite right, but no one said anything. And yes, when you are disconnected in that sense, you need to come to a point of inner support so the support starts to present itself. And mental health is one of the things that I'm quite passionate about, because depression in the word itself doesn't necessarily explain it in the correct form, because it's actually a chemical imbalance in the brain where the serotonin, hormone and serotonin, is absorbed quicker than the body can produce it. And that's through stress and cellular trauma and other areas of the body that need healing. So depression is a physical as much as it is emotional, and we forget that. If we pinned it as physical, I think it would be more widely accepted, and understanding that depression is the way inward to come outward, big time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, before you were just talking about families and, you know, and the heavy responsibility that you've placed on yourself through, you know, what being a mother meant to you, I guess. And I think we've all done that, you know. In particularly, I feel like generationally, you know, the last generation, for me anyway, my mum was really the caregiver. So she was the nurturer. She was the one who looked after the house, and she did the cleaning and my dad helped with the cleaning, but my mum was the cook, and she was the one that provided the love and attention and all that kind of jazz. And my dad was the traditional provider, went out hunter-gatherer style, came back, and his role was financial support and safety. So, and that's kind of the role that we've seen for the last generation. And now we have this generation where women have now also a lot more freedom as to what they choose to do in the world, as in, you know, we can do anything now. It's absolutely incredible. But what we haven't lost is the sense of responsibility through the way that we've seen motherhood be prior to us.
And I think having that responsibility and having that dream is fine, but it doesn't have to be massive. So you can still have your empire, but it can be a micro empire. I think I heard that from, it's either that's a Kate Toon quote or it's a Katie White quote, and I heard it the other day, is that you can still have your empire, but it doesn't have to be huge. So you don't have to do the, the TED Talks, and you don't have to do all of this. You can still have an impact, but it doesn't have to be completely massive. So if we scale it back a little bit and allow us time and space to chronologically give ourselves goals and brain dump all of that amazingness that comes through us, then it doesn't seem so overwhelming.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of the issue is there's a big gap, right? So we see, particularly for me anyway, this has been a really big issue for me, has been this what I call Oprah syndrome, where I feel like there's a need for me to be greater than I am, or something more impactful or bigger or better or something. And all that stuff, like the TED Talks and you know, writing a New York Times bestseller and all this kind of jazz, you never get to that point unless you've done the intermediate work to get to that point. Like, yeah. Sometimes I feel like we want to go from here, from here to Oprah now.
Everybody wants to have a TED Talk and be an Oprah. It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. Because at the end of the day, if we got really honest with ourselves, perhaps that's actually not what we want.
Well, can I just say then, I think what you do is very valuable. And just by being Carly Nimmo and having a voice and taking photos of yourself on the toilet and doing all those sorts of things, that is what helped me step forward, Carly. So by being simply who we are helps the next woman or the next man or the next child next to us. And that's what it's about. It's embracing our being, who is uniquely us. And in that, there's a lot of power. And we devalue that because we need the terms of success, be it the bank balance. But I've had clients walk in and said, "You've absolutely changed my life." And I've gone, "What?" That's the whole point, yeah. And it does happen and it works. And you are amazing. I think you're absolutely incredible. And instead of devaluing that, I accept it now with grace, because that's the absolutely whole bloody point. So absolutely whole point. We embrace our authority and we embrace why we're here. And now I understand I don't need the TED Talk. I don't need that. What I need to do is be effective in what I was given the grace and the gift to do for the people that need me. Yes. And that has just taken huge weights off my back, and now I'm ready to plan and structure and see how that's going to look. So exciting times.
That is the process that I've been through myself, and it wasn't that long ago, well, not just over a month, where I was walking on the beach and really ready to walk away from everything. And it was, but I wasn't ready to walk away from me. I was just ready to walk away from all the other stuff and come back to me. And that just, it's like in a previous episode that I did with Jo, my assistant / right-hand girl at Ragcasters, she had said that freedom for her is the ability to put down the baggage that you're carrying, even just for a breather.
Yeah.
Because we need to create that space.
Yeah, power of surrender.
Yes.
Yeah, Bronnie Ware talks about that too.
Yeah.
And I went and saw her when she came to Perth.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's the space and the surrender that brings the energy in. So letting go of control, the support is always there, but we mind fuck ourselves to the point where we are energetically depleted and we lose faith. But if we just kept offering it up, and I do that a lot because it just what I do it a lot, and sometimes you have to just continuously do it, and you allow for that receptivity and that passive connection to go give you the aha moment, and it's in those aha moments where you just go, oh my God, you couldn't put a price on that.
Yeah. I feel like when we talk about passive and we talk about allowing and all that kind of jazz, a lot of people can be like, yeah, but if you don't take action, nothing happens. And there's a distinct difference, don't you think, between not taking any action and doing things in a passive receptive way.
I think so, and I think sometimes not acting creates more anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not being true to yourself and you're not listening to your intuition and you're not doing what you're meant to do, and that procrastination, you create more pain for yourself. And people can sit in that for a while. They do it with chronic pain. They'll put up with pain constantly. It's when they get fed up with feeling that pain that they'll move. So, acting, it's a passive, it's that masculine and feminine balance that it comes and goes. But when you find that harmony, and I think we're constantly trying to find that harmony, that's where the gold is. And I think that's possibly what we should be aiming for, is creating that times to be passive and times to be active.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like it's, we can still be taking action towards what we want. What needs to, or, what we need to let go of is the control aspect, needing to control how that unfolds.
And how that
looks. Because I think, often we get exactly what we wanted. It just doesn't happen in the way that we had expected it to unfold. So for me, with the Office Collective, it was community. I wanted community. I wanted connection. I wanted like-minded people who got what I, got what I was about. And, I wanted community. And I spent $100,000 and had the big business failure and ended up having exactly that. But that wasn't the way that I had anticipated or expected or tried to control the journey, where sometimes we just have to let go of the how and the direct path and we go here and then we turn left here and then we turn right here and then we do this and then we turn right and then we go. Like, if we just let go of that and actually just stayed open, then we could get there perhaps quicker. But then I don't actually believe that either, because I think that we're exactly where we need to be at all times to learn what we need to learn.
That's the way the creative force works, though, because it's always messy. And I think, and that's the internal journey, is that it's not perfect and it's destabilizing and it's takes you to places, especially running your own, takes you to places you didn't even know existed. I think being open and knowing you have a choice and having a support network, especially for women who have that connection, they can go for that emotional support, because our partners can be there for us, but not in sometimes in the way that we need to be heard. And I think support networks are really important. And when you're isolated and in your stuff, your tendency is to isolate because you don't feel like you have anything to offer. You always have something to offer. There is always insight. Mental illness as such or any of that sort of stuff, or depression or overwhelm, there is always something that you can offer, because there's an insight in it and it's something that we're all learning from. And I think because our patriarchy put us in a nuclear families, and that sense of community is growing in an online sense, and now needs to be made into physical form.
Yep, totally agree.
Yeah. So that's the plan.
For global domination.
Well, no, I don't even know if I can do that. I don't know if I have the energy for that. Do you have the energy for that?
Yeah, no, I don't have the energy for that. And I have no real inclination. Like that's just way too much responsibility for me. You know, yeah, no. Nah. And I think that's been a big part in my journey too, right? It's like what I see with a lot of people that I work with is particularly in the podcasting game, is they start podcasting and then initially they're amazed by it and they absolutely love it and they love that they're using their voice and they, you know, they love that people are connecting to their message. And then they move very quickly from that into doubt. Mm. What are my downloads like? Am I getting good downloads? Is this good enough? Is anybody listening? And on and on and on. And I haven't been immune to that myself either. And I feel like, you know, sometimes we do need a bit of validation. When I had my meltdown on the beach, it was due to the fact that I just really needed to be validated.
Yeah.
And that's okay, you know? Yeah. It's okay to need to be validated sometimes. It's like a basic human need, you know, and that's okay. I think sometimes I've even talked about external validation being a negative thing. I think it is when we're constantly seeking that to, you know, to prop up our self-worth constantly. But there are times when we do need it, and that's, you know, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I think it's
that sense of desperation of being validated is different than, God, I've put all this work out and I'm living my dream and I feel like I'm talking to an empty space. Will someone say hello? You know,
yes.
And that can happen online because you put your heart and soul on certain things, and if you get complete silence, it sometimes isn't about you. It can be about the timing, could be the way the planets are moving in our galaxy. It could be just, you know, especially the last 6 months, beginning of this year, very internal journey. I saw it in the clinic. Everybody was dealing with some very deep stuff. And even, you know, for you to express that was a mirror of what everybody else was feeling. So really you're just articulating where everybody else was at. And that's what happens.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, it took me so long to figure out what my purpose was. I spent the last decade really seeking it. And now I know what it is. And this is it, right? It's for me to talk about what I'm going through. I'm a communicator. This is what I do. I share. I've always been an oversharer. My trip up point has come when I've needed it to be more than that, when I've needed it to have more impact, when I've needed it to be something I can sell, when I've needed it to be something other, when I've lost the trust in the fact that I am fully provided for.
Yeah.
That's when I end up in the doctors hooked up to the ECG.
And you know? But I think that's, but we need to put food on the table. That's a reality.
Absolutely. True. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that will bring stress. And how do we manage that stress? We need a roof over our head and food in the fridge, and our kids will always come first, or the people we care about, or the things will always, certain things will take priority. But if those basic primal needs aren't met, we will panic. It's nature's
and I
way.
Think, if money is the issue there, then there are so many ways we can make it, you know? And I think the issue comes when we need to control the way that it's coming to us. So for me at that time, I needed to control the way it was coming for. I needed it to come from this specific place. I wasn't open to all the other ways it was coming to me. I just needed it to come from here. That was what was causing me the stress. Because truth be told, I could have gotten a job stacking shelves if I had to and still be doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah, but that's passion.
Yes.
And passion blinds. I was exactly the same. And, you know, and I wanted to go out and save the world and advocate for this and advocate for that. And I was probably the most stressed out person in the room. So, you know, I'm telling everyone to relax and connect with themselves. And I was probably the most disconnected. You know, at the end of the day, that's a lesson, you know, and you see that and you go, that's part of my journey. That's why I've ended up here. That's why I've ended up here. And when we can relax into that, and we simplify things in our moment and understand what's the best use of my time in this moment, or what's the best use of my energy in this moment, okay, I can sit here and worry, or I can, you know, go for a walk down the beach or go play with my kid or go read a book and change the internal dialogue.
Yep, shift the energy.
Shift the energy, because the only way, I'm trying to teach this to my daughter at the moment. She's 9 and she hates phonic dictation because she doesn't get the words. And so before they even start, she's crying. And I said to her, this is life. It's hard. There's parts of us that is hard, but what you're afraid of is not real. And the only way you're going to know how good you are is to pick up that pen and to give it a go. And I said, you've got the biggest expectations of failing and you're 9. And that's the biggest life lesson that we're all learning. That's, if you can nail this, Lily, you can nail anything. But you've got to pick up that pen and you've got to give it a go.
So true.
Yeah.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear?
Oh, gosh. I've got a few. But I think falling short. I think I'm just learning to back myself. And I think time management's been one of those things that I've had to really learn to navigate. So there's biggest fear of falling short and certain things that I want to create and things I want to do. It's not about having necessarily high expectations. It's giving myself the space and time to actually give things the energy that it needs. And I think I'm ready to do that. So I know I'm ready to do that, but falling short has always, especially for my kids, and in a family context and then outside into the community, there's places where I've really fallen short. So that's something that I just need to work through, I think. I'm enough.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What's your biggest struggle at the moment?
Oh, time management. I just like talking to people. I like the shiny object over there. I love to pick up the book over there. And I'm grounded. It's just I love to spread myself a little bit too thin. So now I'm recognising that's not getting work done as quickly as it should be. So now it's time management and planning. So now I'm learning to do that. I think, you know, we talk about flexibility and I don't need a plan and I don't need a routine. I need a plan and I need a routine. And waking up to that's been really liberating.
Yeah, because that, you know, it can sometimes feel a bit stuffy and boxy, but it's actually, for me anyway, having parameters around things, having a structure, having a routine actually allows for more freedom.
Exactly.
Which seems counterproductive, but it really is the case because you're not so spread so thin. Your energy is way more contained and that gives you the space to be able to then really create, you know?
Yeah. And, in a clinic sense, it's fine. It's taking what I learn and the themes that come up in the clinic and I want to be able to express that like you do, what you're seeing and what you're experiencing. There is a space for me to do that. It's getting the time to put that into a structure in order to have that underly understood out into the ether. In a clinic sense, very grounded, very together, but trying to create something out of that has been getting the time to do that, because having the responsibilities of being a mum and understanding that I really want to do the business, but I really need to do my kids. So it's learn. I need that time management so I can be 100% with my children and then 100% with my work.
Yeah, be present.
Yeah.
You know, we all have that negative bitch in our heads. What does yours say the most at the moment?
Oh, really? You want to do that? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? And I think I've had quite a journey, a deep internal journey, and I struggled a lot up until probably my early 30s. And it wasn't fun, and I, you know, have healed and moved through that. And I think not allowing my past to define me has held me back a bit. Who am I to be saying this? Who am I to be out there helping others, you know? And I think that's been very much of my journey, and now I'm slowly changing the dialogue to say, who am I not to?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I so relate to that. You know, writing the book, you know, I've got this cool vision for what I would really love for my life, and part of it is I'm already living it. So, you know, having this big vision and, you know, knowing what I want to do and the impact that I'd like to have without being really attached to it, there's still this part of me that's like, who do you think you are that you could just speak your message?
But that's the point.
I know. I know. That's the thing, right?
It's a joke. That's
it is. It's a huge joke because it's like, who am I not to? I'm already doing it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we forget that. Like, we're already doing it sometimes, just perhaps not on the scale that we had envisaged. But if we feel like we're here to create change, we're already creating change.
This is it. So it's owning that authority. It's the same thing that the Aboriginals talk about, is that you have within you all the narratives from your previous ancestors. That's very powerful. And you're here to gestate that, make that into form and birth that as the new. So that's what you're here for. And so when the internal dialogue negates that, it's coming back to, this is what I'm here for.
Yep, totally.
Yep.
What does failure mean to you?
Failure is a deep well of pain, but it's also part of the journey, and it's part of self-discovery. You know, if you asked me 5 years ago, deep well of pain, but now I'm seeing it in a completely different perspective because I've moved through a lot of internal junk and lots of anxiety that being well and being able to help people and live my dream, I see it in a more realistic perspective. So if it's a sense of failure as such, inverted commas, then it's really, I'm just learning.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think once you've failed dismally and the pain of that, you look at life in a humble way, but in a more in a realistic way. And I think it just brings us back. You know, it's a way of slapping the ego out of the way and bringing us back to what really we truly value.
Yeah. And I feel like we can have a few responses to failure. So, you know, we can see it like that. Like, it's just learning, it's just feedback. I've learned a whole bunch of stuff. I'm really grateful for the experience and now I can move on to something else. Or we could see it in the same respect as your daughter doing her phonics, where we feel like almost paralyzed by our previous experience with it. But, you know, the lesson there is just pick up the pen, you know, just get back on the horse.
Yeah. And I think there is space for wallowing. I think we have to
go process.
Oh, yeah, we have to do that process. The trick is not to wallow in it for too long, because life is too short. But you can't say that to someone who's already in it, because that's part of their journey, and respecting that journey is, you know, you're just there. So,
and that's okay.
And that is okay. Yeah.
It sucks, but you're where you
need to be. I think I wallowed for 10 years on something.
Yeah. I've spent many years wallowing. And no doubt I'll wallow again, but I don't have any attachment to not needing to wallow anymore. You know, I don't see wallowing as necessarily a negative thing. It's just a part of the process. It's just part of the spectrum of life.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just a process that we go through. On the flip side of failure, success.
I think having the gumption to bring an idea and bring that into reality. that success, whether it's, you know, anything like that, and to you know, move through with what your heart sings, you know, your heart sings. But if you can bring your ideas into physical form, I think that's successful. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as you get what you need from it. You know, that fulfillment, that sense of fulfillment, whether it's space to watch your favourite TV show or write a poem or, you know, paint a picture or hug your kid. It's taking those moments that make your heart sing. I think that's successful.
And lastly, freedom. What does freedom mean? What does it look and feel like?
I think it's not allowing external forces to dictate what you've come to achieve. I used to look for that external validation. I don't take that on board so much. I'm the type of personality that takes hurt very deeply. Allow myself to be me and not allow, if someone doesn't like me, to just go, oh, she doesn't like me, and run away. It's really stepping forward into my power and being who I want to be and saying what I need to say and just being accepted for who I am.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So as a holistic practitioner, I do online mineral and flower essence therapy sessions. So you can find me at www.silverdale.com.au. I've got a little opt-in that you can sign up for that talks about the power of flowers and connection through bodywork. And there's a few tidbits on creating a successful mindset using holistic therapies. So you can sign up for that. And you can always flick me a quick email if you want to do a 15-minute discovery chat. I do facial diagnostics with mineral therapy, as the face can tell a lot about the minerals that we're deficient in. And then I can intuit for certain flower essences. The flower essences help us clear our old subconscious belief patterning and can bring us back into a heart space. That internal bitch, so to speak, doesn't affect us anymore. We can clear that, bring that into consciousness, and you can walk your freedom and not be bogged down by stuff, because we all have so much stuff.
We do.
Yeah.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
We can see life as a journey, but it's owning your own authority and not allowing your past to define your future. Leave some idea or some sort of thing that other generations can enjoy so they can learn from your wisdom and they can benefit from it. Probably the best thing ever would be to plant a tree, because it's our connection to this, the planet that we live on is what gives us oxygen every day. So it's really important that we honour that and understand that we wouldn't be able to live our dreams, we wouldn't be able to breathe or put anything out there if we didn't have oxygen or the plants that create that, and I think we forget that.
I love that. I love that idea of leaving something behind to help the future generations. Like, that is so cool and actually quite validating for myself right now. So thank you for that gift, because I feel like that is what I'm doing in creating this podcast. I don't know that people will be consuming audio till the end of time, but it is a way of handing something on, and writing the book is the same kind of process, and raising children is a similar thing too. Yeah, so thank you for that. That was a gift in and of itself.
Very welcome, Carly. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Yay.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. It really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. search Shop Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlynimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.